Welcome back. Anthony, good job last time.
Thank you, sir. Welcome back yourself.
And I get to talk about managing test execution part two.
Fantastic. A good way to finish our jumpstart for the day.
Yes, absolutely. So as part of that, I've got the vast majority of what we're to be delivered here, managing bugs, using Lab Center, analyzing recommended tests, performing analysis, and managing work items.
Talk it up some more.
In reality, this won't take twice as long. Anthony, you took run tests and perform exploratory testing, which is a bigger part of the exam and of the overall testing pieces. I do have to say, though, it did make me laugh when I entered this. I took the template from Anthony, and right here, this analyzing lab center right here, that was highlighted as being a misspelling. So was analyze. And so there was a bunch of that.
That looks fine to me. I think you're making this up.
Don't make me hit escape. All right. Managing bugs. What does the guide say? The guide says on managing bugs, how do we track it, first of all? Verifying bugs, like creating tests from bugs, analyzing bug reports, and managing bug workflow. So I want to rearrange these because they're kind of messed up. I want to know about the full bug workflow first. So we need to talk end to end. What does it take to file a bug, fix a bug, verify it, do the whole gamut from a tester's perspective? We're not going to spend a lot of time in the dev activities. We'll just do some hand waving and say things were created appropriately. So let's jump in. And first thing we'll do is the end-to-end bug lifecycle. And then we'll go look at one or two of the places where we might find reports on those bugs. So stepping into the next piece is the demo. And we'll step into that demo right now. Moving over into my virtual machine. One moment while my screen comes back to life. And we're in. So if you can go back to my desktop, and we'll take a look here at our test case. Clicking Add to Cart button twice results in two items in the cart. Just want to remind you of what we did here, all of the various steps. Let's go ahead and save and close this. And we're going to run this test case. So we'll simply run it. Not going to run with options. It pulls to the side, start the test. And I've got a recording, so I'm going to go ahead and play these first five steps just so I don't have to. Once again, there could be all sorts of weird things that a human might miss. So I'll go ahead and have it do it all up for me. And then once we get here, we're going to click Add to Cart a second time. Notice we have one item in the cart. I'll click Add to Cart, and we still have one item in the cart. So that failed that one. Only one item in the cart. From that point, I'm going to go ahead and grab a screenshot, much like Anthony showed earlier. Take that screenshot over there. I could mark it up and stuff, but you've already seen how that works. And right next to here, I'm going to create a bug. And that bug I'm going to create will be adding to cart twice doesn't. We're going to go ahead and assign that to myself, someone to fix it. And notice I have all of the steps that go down all the way through on my bug. Let's go ahead and save and close that. Now, one of the things I recorded this as, I recorded it running under my lightweight diagnostics, which we decided that would be a best way to do it. But what I'm not getting is some of the things like video and things that make it easy. So let's go over. We can empty the cart and close the application. And we are now done. We can save and close that and come right back to here. We now have a bug. If we go to verify bugs, you'll see that we have adding to cart twice doesn't. It's assigned to Brian Keller. There's an associated result for it. Here's when it was created, etc. Now, what I'd like to do from this point is I want to fake out being a developer. So a developer might come in here and go to work item 69 and change the state from active to resolved, and the reason is as designed. Save the work item. Now, realistically, adding to cart twice as designed would be a horrible way to do that. However, we're going to leave it at that because our focus is on looking at this bug life cycle from the perspective of the tester. So we've created this bug based off of a test case that was running. We passed that bug over to the developer. The developer said, I fixed the bug, and they passed it back to me. Now I want to show you one thing. Let me go ahead and open up this bug. If I open it up, there's an association with this test case. This test case is related to the bug. So the bug is related to the test case. If I open up the test case, I can see the test case is tests this particular user story as well. In addition, there is a bug related to the test case. So I can see the test case and the user story right from here. The user story itself, if we open that up, has links also to the bug and the test case. Now, why is it important to have a link to a bug all the way through the test case to the requirement? The primary reason is to start to establish that traceability. We now have a potential quality problem with this requirement. So we'll need to go back and fix that problem. So let me close things out again. And I'm back into my verify bugs. So my bug lifecycle, I created it. It was an active bug. I moved it to resolved. And now, and this is an MSF Agile, I'm going to move it into closed. But how do I do that? First, I have this adding to cart twice doesn't. There's a couple things I can do. One of those things is verify or verify with options. Verifying with options will let me choose a particular build that I want to work with or something else. Or I can just click verify. Other things before I do that I can do are open the test case. This will show me the related test case to that bug. Additionally, if we assume there wasn't a test case, I could also create a test case from the bug itself. If I do that, notice what it does. It looks at, we're going to start testing, we're going to go to this website, the step completed, then we're going to click on model airplanes, that step's completed, click on a button. Basically, it's going to create what it thinks are the appropriate test steps for that. So if you have a bug, you can create a test case directly from the bug. Now, Anthony showed it from exploratory testing, and I actually think that gets you a much cleaner result than we find here. Here you'll see lots of areas here that say step completed. So we have a step and then a step completed, so you have to delete all of those particular areas, all those particular actions. So we'll close it, and we don't need to save that particular one. But just know that you can create a test case from a bug. Now, the next thing I'd like to do is verify the bug. So I'm a tester. I see the state is resolved. I need to make sure that the bug itself is verified. So to do so, I click verify, and notice what it does. It pulls it to the side and lets me start testing immediately. So the first thing I'm going to do, we're going to fire up Internet Explorer. Oops, don't want to fire it up quite yet. Let's go ahead and start our test. Let's go to start the test. And rather than fire it up, I'm just going to play through all of those steps. I'm going to play one additional step here where it actually goes in and clicks that Add to Cart button the second time. So here we are in the second Add to Cart, and it's added to the cart. It's still one item in the cart. The developer told me this is as designed, so I'm going to say, it passes. At that point, we empty the cart, and we close it. And we're done. We end the test. Notice we only have one area checked. We have this area validated, and when we end the test, it does something interesting. Save and close. It closes it all up, and it says, hey, a test that was failing is now passing. Would you like to close the bug? Yes, I would. I'm going to put in a new comment. I think this design is stupid.
I want you to put at the beginning because I want to see how to spell it.
That's too much like ah.
Yeah, no, that's not it. That's not it.
Arr.
That's how's like that? That's like a pirate.
Avast.
Much better.
He's scurvy. Yes, okay. Okay, we'll go ahead and save those changes. And notice that my bug is now closed. If I open up that bug, one thing I want to show, because we'll be talking about work items a little later, but I can see that the bug itself was closed, the reason it was verified, and it was as designed. Down here, I can see the full history. Here's my notes, is here, and all of my changes exist here. So I can see all of the changes that were made, including all of the field values that were changed. We have complete transparency. I can add comments here, and you can do things like I can add comments here, you know, blow it up nice and big. And at that point, when we save it, you'll see that if we go to only the discussion, you'll see we have kind of this blog ordered discussion. That's very nice over here that you can see. If we look at the system info, we've got the system info. We mentioned that we were capturing that. This is the build it was found in. If we had resolved it and then triggered a build, this integrated in build would be populated automatically as well as to when we fixed it, what build, in which what build it was fixed. That was an awkward sentence. All right. Here we are. Let's go back to our verify bugs. And we've kind of laid out all of the things that we can do here on the bug verification. That's the life cycle of a bug. We go through several transition states. And be aware that the state transitions are different for CMMI, Agile, and Scrum. You're going to want to take a look at those, not in extraordinary depth, but it's important that you know all of those. All right, especially in the Agile track. Okay, from that point, we need to start tracking some of the bug metrics. Now, I've got a whole section on reporting later. So what do you think, Anthony? Can I defer opening up some of the reports till I can so I can show all of them?
I think you can.
I think I might do that. I'm going to go ahead and defer opening up some of the specific bug-related reports because I have a whole section on reporting, and on that section on reporting, we'll want to make sure that we dive into it deep enough to get a firm handle on it rather than hit it in two separate places. So that wraps the bug lifecycle. One thing we do need to know, though, is that test case that's related to the bug still remains in its ready state, as you see here. We don't move it to closed. The test case is not closed just because the bug is closed. We possibly want this here for use in our regressions. All right, let's jump from here back into our PowerPoint presentation. Did you see it? Center was underlined like it was misspelled.
Didn't see it.
Ugh.
Sorry.
Next section. I'm waiting. I'm slow.
Sorry, I was answering some of these questions about your presentation.
Oh, no. Here's what the study guide says about using Lab Center: creating new environments, creating copies of environments, running tests on remote environments, and executing a test case in the Lab Center environment. It's kind of a mishmash of various things that are dropped in here. And definitely, not all of these things happen to be in Lab Center. Yeah, all right. But that's okay. We'll explore them in a couple of different areas. Quick thing on lab management
automation.
You just
did a transition.
What's that?
We've been creative with your slides, then. I think I witnessed a transition.
Look at that. Yeah.
Did you have spare time when you were prepping this?
No, I copied and pasted it from another slide deck. And it came with the transition, just like that. But that was a nice transition. The lab management automation. We started this development and testing area, and we've got a couple things underneath. Now, I mentioned lab management and lab center. Lab center, that we'll see in the demo, is really the core UI for managing lab management. However, lab management is not a big component of the prep materials to test for this test. It's not really something big on the exam. But you do need to know what it is and how it operates. So let's take a quick look at this particular slide where we're going to find out what the environments are and what the lab management services provided are. So the first for the environments, and if we flip to the slide, you'll see we have development environments, test environments, and repro environments. These are potentially various things that I'm going to have that might be different environments that I'm working with. Lab management is a tool that can provide me an environment template that I can provision on the go, pull up a brand new environment, and then use it, and potentially, like you mentioned, grab that snapshot.
Mm-hmm.
Love those pieces. That requires System Center Virtual Machine Manager, and it's not something that's covered in this exam. It is, however, something covered in the admin exam. The admin exam is pretty broad.
Is it something I have to go and buy, SCVMM?
Yes, it is. You do have to buy. It's System Center Virtual Machine Manager. Mm-hmm. And if you want to use SCVMM, it's licensed completely separately from Team Foundation Server. But Team Foundation Server puts this lab management capability on top of it.
Okay.
Again, we'll talk more about that tomorrow. So I think we'll defer a lot of those discussions for tomorrow. But you do need to know that particular type of data. Mm-hmm. Those things. What SKUs are available? What does it do? And how does it work? So that's basically what we've covered
okay.
as far as lab management. I'm going to go a little bit more slides just to make sure I pound enough of the broad details home. The idea here is something like a continuous build deploy test. And if you look over here in a lab center, we can actually grab and create labs from virtual machine templates in SCVMM. So the idea is you create templates in SCVMM and combine them to create environments. Now we already created my, what do we call it? Tailspin Toys web environment, I believe is what I named it. I mean, we created that environment. It's very similar, but you can create them off of virtual templates and spin them up. It allows developers to really come in and get the whole deployment process running as part of a build, so we can deploy the environment, deploy the code, and then give it to the testers. What's cool is testers can walk in and say, I want this environment with this particular build, and it'll spin up the environment and deploy the build into the environment. And we can manage those environments from within our lab center in MTM. And all of these builds can give us all of the data that we need for running that. I really think that's important. It's the data that we had when we created that one template, my Tailspin Toys web, and it automatically deployed everything necessary into it. And it didn't even break a sweat, right? It just threw everything necessary, including the agents and everything, right onto that machine. So let's take a look at a demo now as we move into using the lab center itself. All right. If you jump over to the virtual machine, you're still seeing my PowerPoint. Well, well. Me and PowerPoint, I'm telling you.
This is what happens when you poke fun at my spelling.
Look, there it is. If you flip back to my screen.
I can just see a screen, video.
Now when you flip to my screen, just before I go over to look at that environment, you'll see center right there. See? Oh. See? Yep, I've got the UK spelling. Where is it the Australian spelling? Do you need to go either way?
We use the same spelling as the UK.
Okay. So you probably have that.
The good Queen's English.
Yeah, right. Let's jump in now. And instead of looking at the testing center, let's switch over and look at the green tabs, as you might call mm-hmm. them, Anthony, or the lab center itself. And under the lab center, we have this area of lab. And I just want to talk very briefly. We've talked about creating new environments. And we did that at length earlier on at the very first section when we needed to talk a little bit about very similar topics. So in order to do that, you simply click New. Now, you can also click Deploy if you have SCVMM linked. If I go over here to Library, it's going to raise an error that says, hey, you're not connected. Your lab manager isn't connected. That's because I don't have lab management on this particular one. So that's going to prevent me here in the lab from using this deploy as well. Notice that my environment is ready. Everything's up and running, and I can connect to it if necessary. If we look at our test settings, here's another way that we can look at all of our various test settings for lab management. You can see here that the little data is for the automated runs, and here's all of our manual runs as well. And then we can switch over to controllers, and here's where we have our test controllers. I created that secondary test controller that I used as well. And we have another previous one that was unavailable. That setting, that lab center setting that we just walked through, exhausts end-to-end all of the functionality in the Lab Center. It's not a giant thing you need to know. But there's two things that in this area it asks me to talk about, which is running tests on remote environments and executing a test case in a Lab Center environment. So I want to execute that. They're kind of very similar. Mm-hmm. So I've got a Lab Center environment here called Tailspin Toys Web. And I want to execute a test case on that particular environment. I'm going to do that by going back to the testing center. And this is strictly a refresher. If we go back to our work item, let's get all the way back, I suppose. All the way back to our work item here. Number 40. And if we see that number 40 was automated, we can right-click it and run it from here. That run picks up what is, or let me run with options and we can see it. This is the configuration, this is the build, and here are the test settings. We're using that in particular environment. So all you have to do to run a test on an environment from MTM is simply go right here and specify the environment as well as those test settings. We'll go ahead and run that in an automated fashion. I'm going to say don't run because we have already seen it run. Was that you had a question on that?
Oh, there's a question there. If you've already got an environment set up and you click connect, does it just open a remote desktop connection?
Oh, what a great question. So let's go back over here to Lab Center, and we'll see it opens up something similar to, but not exactly. So let's take a look here, and let's connect to it. And when we connect to the environment, there's something called the Microsoft Environment Viewer. And it looks suspiciously like a remote desktop. However, there might be multiple machines here. And it gives me some more options if it happens to be a System Center, a Virtual Machine Manager managed one. I can roll back, I can roll forward, etc. But as you can see, it's pretty much a remote desktop that fits here and gives me capability to look full screen, control, alt, delete. But there are some unique behaviors. I have this sidebar. I can do things like mark this as in use so that no one else can remote into it other than me. It gives them a warning. It says, hey, somebody's already using it, etc. So there are things that kind of add on that I can use based on this. What a great question.
I'm sure Josh is very happy with that answer.
I hope so. Josh, if you're not, go ahead and send it on back in again. All right, coming back in, that was how we ran one from there. And the other one was running tests on a remote environment. And that particular one, we need to go back to the testing center again. And there's a lot of different places. I'm at Run Tests. See here it says Perform Tests Using the Local Machine. This says when I run my tests, I want to run on this machine. If I have a separate machine that I want to trigger my tests to run on, I would specify that machine. Then when I start to run it, I'll need to remote in there and run from there. However, the cool thing here is this, when I modify it, it's mostly used for remote devices that are Windows Store apps. So this is an amazing demo. It's totally not appropriate for this particular test preparation guidance, but what you do is you specify your device. My device might be called Steve's
Surface.
We'll do a Surface. And maybe Steve's Surface Not Pro. It doesn't even have to be a Surface Pro. And then the port, :6905, is the default port. I'm going to go ahead and test this, and you're not going to find it, and it's not going to be able to connect to it. But if you connect to it, you can then start to run exploratory tests or regular tests against a Surface device. It's a fun one. I know that I give the demo. I know you do, Anthony, as well. It's worth finding someone who does that. They walk around with a Surface device right in the midst of the audience doing all of the testing, and when they file a bug, all of it shows like the little screenshots from the Surface. It's smoking cool. But what you do need to know is that if I want to perform manual tests on a remote device, I need to provide the device name as well as the port, and it needs to be accessible from this machine. Go back to a local machine for this one. All right, I think that wraps that piece up as well. Yeah. There's that using Lab Center, I'm telling you.
We've done a straw poll online and people like my way better.
Wouldn't be surprised. It just caught me. All right, here I am. I'm going to walk into the next section, which is analyzing the recommended tests. Now, we've already done this once, so we're going to go in and show it again, maybe from a slightly different view. But when we start with this, let's take a look at the things that we do need to learn. We need to select the build in use, compare the current build to a previous build. We haven't done that yet. We've compared the current build to a future build. Viewing recommended tests and analyzing related work items. So to do that, we're going to go straight again into a demo, and this demo is going to show off some of those key areas. So as we pop in, again dropping straight into the demo machine, and we can take a look at the tests and doing those comparisons. Now remember, I went to the test plan before. So this is one approach. You go to the test plan, you look at the properties of the plan, and you go down here. You have the filter for builds and the build in use, and you modify the build in use, and you can choose a later build. Now, I don't have a later build in this particular one. What if you wanted to choose an earlier build? How would you do that? I've given nothing here. I've given no options. My build in use, if I click it, it simply brings me to the build report itself. Mm-hmm. Do you know how to do that?
I'd go and remove the filters, and that would perhaps give me the list of earlier ones.
I can't. Yep, filter for builds, clear all, set that build filter, and bingo, we're back in again where we can select all of them. Nicely done! I thought I'd catch you for sure. Assign this old one to the plan, and now we've seen how we can see the distance between this old one and any new ones. However, that's not the only approach. Instead of just assigning the builds, we can go over and take a look at track. The track tab provides a way to assign a build here as well. This is where we assign the build and run it right here. We can see the deltas. Again, this is the same screen we saw before, and there is a recommended tests tab. Now there's a difference. Assign a build is specifically for assigning a build. It shows you the available builds, and it shows you the delta between the current build and future builds that you may want to assign. For instance, the build between .3 and this latest build, these are the things that were worked on. Recommended tests goes the opposite way. Our current build is here, and then we can check previous builds to compare with. So we can compare with a previous build and see any delta here. Now I'm going to go ahead and modify the build in use to be the latest one. And then when we go back to the recommended tests, we can see by rolling back to like .3, here are all of the various things that we may need to do. Now, there are two tabs here. One called recommended tests. Here are the recommended tests that need to be rerun, same as before. Here are the related work items that we need to deal with. That wraps up really how to analyze those recommended tests. Remember, in order to do that, you need to have test impact analysis set and up and running. Without test impact analysis, this won't work at all. So test impact analysis is required for this. Plus, on your local level, you need the ASP.NET client proxy for IntelliTrace and test impact analysis to be enabled. Those two things are required. All right, off from this and back once again to our slides. And I'll note once again on the slide, if you flip over to the slides, the analyze again is all funky. Sorry, I'm just beating the spelling thing to death. The look I got is, oh, all right, all right. Performing analysis. Let's talk a little bit about what it takes to do some performing some analysis on understanding where we are. This is the second to the last topic, then we roll right into managing work items. But performing analysis. This one is analyzing reports, analyzing by test suite, by configuration, analyzing areas where the quality is low, and identifying test plan status. Almost all of these things that we'll be talking about deal with reporting. But we've got different types of reporting. We've got the reporting that's available in MTM, as well as the reporting that's available in SQL Server reporting services and the Excel pieces as well. So we also have those Excel reports. We're going to focus on the Excel reports and the MTM experience and look a little bit at those SSRS reports as well. So from here, before we go to a demo, I do want to show a couple more things. The first thing to note is we've got all of these quality metrics and different stakeholders that care about different quality metrics. Users need exploratory testing and actionable feedback. Solution managers need requirements management, etc. We can scroll across all of these. And there's tools that are fed data to give these reports meaning. And those reports come out of something called a data warehouse. And if you look at the bottom, you'll see that there are several examples of some custom reports. A stories overview, test failure analysis, bug reactivation, bug trends. These are all important reports. And they come out of this data warehouse and an OLAP cube. They allow us to visualize the quality of our application. Here is something called a build report, a build summary report, and it'll show us all of the builds and all of the test case failures that have been associated with those builds. I think I can't really zoom in here, but that's the idea behind that one. And here's the kicker. They allow you, reports allow you to see things ahead of time and look at them over time so you can see progress as it exists today. I think that's one of the key things I love about this tool is it allows you to get status reporting as of right now. Bug bashing. If you're going to go into a bug bash, there's a few things you want to know about, right? Do we have a regression issue? Is it a known issue? Is it a reactivated bug? Reactivated bugs are interesting. And that's because they tend to be rather naughty bugs. So it's I'm a tester, I find a bug and I pass it to Anthony who fixes the bug and says, I've resolved the bug. He passes it back to me and I shake my head and say, no, no, and I reactivate the bug. That step, that was ever active and bring it back, that means that basically something went wrong. I wasn't able to create enough details that Anthony was able to reproduce it, or he was just too lazy and just threw it back over the gate, over the wall. In any case,
your requirements.
That could very well be. So that bug reactivation is an interesting one. Bug regressions are another interesting one, because a regression occurs when I get a bug, find a bug as a tester, I pass it to Anthony, he fixes the bug, passes it right back to me, and I say, thumbs up, and it goes to the customer. I've closed the bug, and a customer finds it and says, wait, it's not fixed yet, and we move it back to active. Those are far worse, but those are regressions.
Hey, Steve, look at that. Oh, he's taking it off.
He took it off just like that.
Come on. Round of applause, back in the room.
That was very good. That was good. I know it was a little empty part of the slide. I loved it. I did see that. So. Filling in the gaps. Here is an example where you actually have line-by-line code coverage reporting off of manual tests. You used to have to jump through all sorts of crazy hoops to get this. No longer do you have to do that. And then a picture's worth a thousand words. There's the stories overview report. This one's so important, I want to drill into it and look at it more deeply. This report blows me away. This is this linkage that we get, and we'll see the linkage when we talk about managing work items. But look at this. If I look over here and say, add real-time phaser measurements, you can see that my hours completed, I've completed 63% of my hours remaining. So I still have some time left. I've got 30 hours, and I've got 7 test points, of which very few are passing, more are failing, but most haven't even been run. In addition, I have 1 active and 1 resolved bug against it. This gives me some really nice information. If I look at this first one, add capability to have international addresses tied to accounts, note that we've completed 100% of our hours. Most of our tests are passing, but something's failing, and no bug has been filed. That's a warning sign. If my tests are failing, they ought to have a bug attached to them, in most cases. It's just a way for me to go look. So this gives me a real strong feeling of the quality of my application. Now, what on earth is the light green versus the darker green? This is the hours recently completed. It's kind of like the growth off of an evergreen tree. You know, they get very dark branches, and then when they grow in spring, they come out and they're very light green. That's what we have here. This is what people have been working on at this time. So we can see where most of the effort has gone recently. Recently being the last 3 days. Configurable, of course. All right, that's the stories overview report. It shows me for each requirement, the work progress, the test results, and any bugs that are active or resolved. Let's jump into a demo of performing analysis. Once again, we're going to switch over, and I'm going to drop into the virtual machine, and we're going to walk through some of the key reports that we need to kind of dig out good information from. When we jump over and look at the actual screen here, I'm going to pull open Internet Explorer. Now, I have gone to 3 different projects. Here's my Agile project, my Scrum project, and my CMMI project. And each one of these has a group of Excel reports and regular reports. Now, I can open up regular reports, and what those regular reports do is they're going to bring me over to a SQL Server Reporting Services report. And these are areas where I can drop into, for instance, bugs and get things like bug status, bug trends, and my reactivation reports. For prepping for the exam, open these up, float over them, and read the little help text that pops up. It's a breakdown by status and severity. Bug trends helps me track the rate at which my team is discovering and resolving bugs. It shows a moving average. Reactivations helps me track how effectively the team is fixing bugs. And if we're having that dev test ping pong. And we can step up back to CMMI and we can look at the tests. And we can look at test case readiness, how many test cases are ready to be run. And test plan progress shows the results of those running tests over time. I'm going to encourage every one of you to jump out and look at these reports and just read those highlighted areas. In addition, if we take a look at test plan progress, for an example, you can always pop out to Bing and type in test plan progress site:msdn.microsoft.com. And it'll link to an MSDN article which will show you the test plan progress report. This is actually my preferred way to study for these. As opposed to going in and opening up every one of those reports, I instead go and I look at the test plan progress report, and it tells me what questions that report answers, and it tells me all about that particular report. In addition, I can see right next to that, there's other reports like the test case readiness report, and I can just kind of drill in to each of those reports side by side until I understand all of those reports. I really, really have to say, use the MSDN documentation while you're preparing for this. It's absolutely necessary. It's so much easier than going in and looking at each particular one. But you can also, like I showed before, simply create a CMMI project, an Agile project, and a Scrum project, and drill into each of them that way as well. It's also good to get a feel for them, I think. All right, back in for the demo, and I'm going to go back a little bit, all the way back to our case in our CMMI, where we're back to our project, and look at some of the Excel reports. I'm going to look at the Excel reports for CMMI, and notice we have a lot of them. I also want to go back to the Agile Excel reports and note that we also have a lot of them. If you look carefully, the Agile reports and the CMMI reports are virtually identical. They're very, very similar. There's only a few that don't overlap. Contrast that, however, with the Scrum Excel reports, where you got nothing. You got one that's called a report template. That's it. I find the lack of reports disturbing. I like to take some of the Agile Excel reports and bring them over for my Scrum development. Now, you're the first certified Scrum trainer in Australia. Mm-hmm. Is it okay to do that, to take some of my Agile reports and bring them over and use them in my Scrum project?
I do it regularly.
All right. Didn't know if we'd come to fisticuffs over that, because I really like those. No. Must have.
I agree with you, my friend.
You really need to pull in those reports and use them. There's some good stuff. So that's beyond the test. But if you're using the Scrum template, feel free to take those Excel reports, bring them over, a little bit of fiddliness to get them copied. But once you've fiddled in, they work like a champ. So let's take a look at some of those Excel reports. In here, we have bug progress, bug reactivations, bug trends, bug by assignments, bug by priority. Whew, we got a lot of bug status ones. And this goes back to that whole section that we have on managing bugs. It's a big deal. And there's a lot of these things that are here. Those are the ones you need to care about. There's the build status report as well. Then scroll down and we have test activity, test case readiness, test plan progress, user story progress, and user story test status. All of these are Excel reports, and you should be at least familiar with them. If we go under test management, we'll see we have a few others as well. Build quality, test team productivity, progress, and testing gaps. If we open up one like test team progress, what we'll find is you'll get to see an example of what it looks like, and what types of data is it grabbing, and how is it grabbing that? I'm not going to go into each and every one of these, but you can see this one is showing from the test plan the number of test suites that are either blocked, never run, failed, or passed. Let me close that. Again, my favorite way to do that is simply to go ahead and query those inside of MSDN. This is the test team progress report that I just showed you. It's very nice to look at, but here it tells you what it's used for, the test plan progress. What are we trying to do with it? How well are we authoring it, etc. So we have lots of different things that that data can provide for us. We have our test team productivity. We can click on that one and read about what its purpose is. And for this exam, I'd recommend you know what these reports are for. Because reporting is one of the key reasons why people move to using this particular tool to do their testing. They want that end-to-end integrated understanding of what's happening both in their dev teams, their test teams, their project management teams, all of that, get that end-to-end view. It's very, very important. And to get that end-to-end view, you got to look at reports. So those reports are pretty critical, and that means they are a substantial chunk of the exam. Not, you know, all of it, but by all means, they're a big chunk. You'll need to study for it. I drop up into some of these Excel reports, and then I walk through on the MSDN slide and pull out each of the reports and at least read those headlines for what those particular reports are. The ones it calls out particularly are test plan status, etc. But reports, both Excel and SQL Server reporting services, aren't the only place we find data. In fact, we can find it right inside of MTM. If we go back to the test plan itself, we can show the results right here. The results page shows me for this test plan a lot of data. Like, notice, I'm looking at here the test results details by tester. I want to see how my testers are doing. Or by test suite. I can see all of my test suites. I can filter on my test suites, say, well, I really only care about my end-to-end tests, and as a customer, I should be able to remove items. And you'll see it only shows me those. I can also look at my tests as per my test configurations. So I might want to see, I just want to see what Vista and IE7 look like. I got nothing. Anthony, my tester's been doing no testing on that one. Let's take a look at Windows 7. Oh, he has some there. Just a little bit of tests on IE7, or on IE8. But if we open it up and look at Windows Server, we'll see we've done an awful lot of testing for Windows Server. And maybe that's legitimate. Maybe that's where most of our testing should be run. So we can see that, and we can filter it on test suites. We can filter it on test configurations. We can view the test result details by test suite or by individual tester. And we can find out why it failed, what was the reason, and by analysis on the failing. So this is another way to see some of these. Now, there was one thing to cover, identifying areas where quality is low. How do you find low quality? One way is to look at the requirements overview report or the stories overview report and look at the requirements that have a whole lot of bugs around them or have no tests around them. Both of those are indicators of either low quality or potentially low quality with pretty high risk. So that's one way we can do that. Okay, I'm going to minimize this. We're going to jump right back to the PowerPoint deck and take a little look at managing work items. This is the last section of the day. It's an important one. There's actually quite a few exam questions that I recall on just work items in general. Mm-hmm. Just how do you deal with work items? It's something that we have to do day in and day out as testers, as developers, as IT admins, you name it. So what the study guide says, managing work items, validating requirements. It's a little bit fuzzy. We've shown you the stories overview report, or AKA the requirements overview report. That's pretty good. We also have work item relationships, creating queries, and performing bulk updates. We want to talk about how you perform updates of these things. Let's go do it. I'm going to pop over for a demo of managing the work items. And to do so, again, back into the virtual machine. In this demo, I'm not going to dive into validating requirements so deeply. Instead, we're going to be looking more at the work item queries and the relationships that all of these things have. So first, let me beat to death, because it's important to know, how are these things related? How's a bug related to a test case, related to a user story? To do so, let's go find our bug again and look at that relationship. So I'm going to go back into track, and I'm going to click on the queries button, and I'm going to look at one of my queries, my bugs. And I'll run that. My test cases. Clicking add to cart twice results in two items in the cart. The reason I didn't see my bug was it was closed already. Let's open up my test case. And my test case is related to my bug and my user story. It's important that you know that it's related to both of those items. If I go into the bug itself is related as well to the user story and the test case. It's this deep relationship between them so that I can get things like my story's overview report to just fall out nicely. Here's the test cases that I'm testing, and of course by looking at all links, you can see I have many, many links here, but most of them that I care about are the related user story and that tested item. That's how the links are made. If you happen to be in your test plan, and inside the test plan, if you are adding a new test underneath one of these requirements, and I say, I want a new test, and this new test is called foo test, and I save and close it, that foo test, if I open it up and I look at the tested user story, it's going to test that user story that it was related to. I think that's important. That's how that linkage is made. Not through some crazy attachments things or anything. It's just pretty straightforward. Let's go back to track, go back to look at my queries, and the next thing to understand beyond those linkages is creating queries. So we have these work item relationships. Now let's create some work item queries. Now you can create queries in my queries that are only the things that I see, and you can create shared queries if you have the appropriate permissions that anybody can see. So let's go in and let's create a query. I want to know my requirements, in this case a user story, and bugs. I want to know my user stories and my bugs that I need to track. So to do that, we're going to create a new query. And it's going to give me this beautiful option over here. And I'm going to do everything from within MTM. You can do the same thing on the web and the same thing in Visual Studio. This new query will be my bugs and user stories. Now there's a couple things to remember or to know. This at project, that means the team project is just the current project. And assigned to is another one of these where I can say at me. Now that means whoever runs it. Anthony, if you run it, it's going to show you your bugs and user stories. If I run it, it'll show me my bugs and user stories. Next thing we'll do, we'll add where the work item type is equal to user story. Hey, I want to return user stories, but I also want to return bugs. So I can change this to or work item type is equal to bug. Now, how do you interpret this logically? Is it assigned to is me and work item type is user story, or the work item type is bugs, where the bugs might be assigned to you?
I'd group those closest, Steve.
Let's do that. Let's grab those two. We'll take those two right
there. Sorry, were you getting to that?
No, I was asking you specifically. You group, highlight them both, and you can say group those selected clauses. And it puts this little line around it just like that. So now when we run it, we're going to see all of the user stories and the bugs that are assigned to me. I could also put in where the state is not equal to closed, for instance. Or I might want to say, and the created date is later than or equal to today, -7. What's that going to give me? It's going to give me nothing because it's not at now. I saw you over there grinning he was. All right.
Of course not.
I don't know why I always put at now. I always put at now, and it always gives me the warning, sorry, there's only three. But hey, that's how you can find out what they are. Put in the wrong one. See? I was explaining how to find out all three of those.
Thank you. I learned from that. That was good.
So at today, -7 will give me anything that was created later than 7 days ago.
Cool. Do we have the ability to do like an action replay? Can we rewind like a minute and a half and see that again? No? No, okay, that's a shame. That's all right. I'll watch that again later.
If I put less than and equal to today minus 7, I could say, show me all the really old user stories and bugs, anything older than 7 days. You get the idea. That's how we can create some of these queries. And the queries, I would very much recommend people go out and study those queries. Figure out how those queries work. I think it's an important thing. Let me go back into the queries again. It's under track, queries. And there's another interesting thing. If I want to run queries, let me close some of my open items here. Get all these things closed. Now I'm going to go back to my queries tab, and I'm going to run a query. I'm going to run that my query that I had, my bugs and user stories, and I want to compare that with my test cases for some reason or another, or the product backlog. I want to compare that to the product backlog. Notice I see the product backlog, I look at it, I study it, and then I go back up to my bugs and user stories, and I look at that one, and I study it, and I remembered, is that in the, you get the idea. I want to compare these things side by side. It's very difficult to compare side by side, but there's a special little trick that I learned. And I love this little trick because I had no idea for the longest time until I was actually prepping for delivering this course. If you reach over and you click this queries button again, look over here, open items is now 2. I have my queries for my bugs and user stories, and now I can run my product backlog here, and I can just simply flip between them back and forth without having to rerun those queries. Just wanted to show that. If you click it again, you get another one. Now, what do you use queries for? There's a million different things. Queries aren't just used here in this visualization. For instance, if I'm over in organizing and I'm looking at my test case manager, I want to filter these things. I can go in here and filter out. Let's say I have test cases, and like this test case is ready. I'm going to move it to closed, test case 40, save it. Notice it's still here. If I refresh this, it's still there. I don't want to see my closed ones. What I can do is I can create a filter where I just simply say, and the state is not equal to closed. At that point, I can run it, and it's not there, so let's save that query. And now you see I don't have to look at it here. That also works for things like shared steps, test configurations, etc. Anything with a filter on it, you can use. I think that's an important thing to know, you use these not just for filter, not just for creating your own queries, but you use them throughout for filtering as well. Now, bulk updating, it can be problematic. How do you bulk update something? So I've got a plan here. I go to my contents, and I've got these things I want to update. I want to bulk update them. Well, one way might be I go to my queries, I go to my shared queries, I look at my product backlog, and I want to change the iteration path, all of these to iteration 3. So I simply highlight all of them and nothing. Mm-hmm. I can click open. It's just going to open one of them, whichever I happen to right click on. You can't bulk edit here. If you need to edit here, you need to go one by one by one by one by one. If you need to bulk edit in Visual Studio, it's the same thing. If I'm in Visual Studio, I go back to my work items, and I run my query here, and I want to update the state of these 4, I can highlight them all, but when I right-click, I can't do anything. I can't bulk edit them. If you click open, it just gives me one of them. Now, one of the things I can do, however, is I can highlight a group of them, right-click them, and open that selection in Microsoft Excel. I can also go down here and open the entire query in Microsoft Excel. I'm going to show this one because this is less common. Let's take all of the active ones, and we're going to move them to resolved. We can highlight them, right-click, open that selection in Microsoft Excel, and that's going to give us the opportunity to look at all of these, go in and change the state from active to resolved, copy that down, and publish. Bulk editing is brilliant in Excel. So if you need to do bulk edits, you pull them into Excel. Let's go one more thing. Let's go back here and look. If we run that query again, you see here they all are as they're active. Let's rerun the query. Now they're all resolved. I've got something painful that I'd like to show. I'm going to go up to my web access. This is my Fabricam Fiber web access. And you're going to have to show me how this works. I'm going to go off topic here. I'm going to go off road. I'm going to go out here and look at my work items. And from within here, I can run my product backlog query. What a wonderful thing. Let's highlight a group of these things, right-click them, and edit the selected work items. Bulk edit the selected work items. And here, we can specify a field. Let me see here, what field should we use? Let's do, see where it says assigned to Brian Keller? We'll change the assigned to we'll change all of those to Annie Herman and click OK. Boom. That's money. Mm-hmm. You can also bulk edit right from within your web pane as well. So two places to bulk edit, right in the web and right inside of Excel are the two primary places. You can also kind of quasi do it if you happen to jump into Microsoft Project, but it's a little bit different. Project's not very good at bulk editing. Excel, brilliant at bulk editing. You can also do it on the web.
Do you want to take a quick question that's
related to this? I would love to take a question because if we don't take them now, we're hitting the end.
So there was a question there about being able to edit test steps by round-tripping up to Excel.
If you want to edit test steps by round-tripping up to Excel, let's fire up an Excel browser and we'll show you how the pane works. Test steps, if I want a round-trip, let me go grab some test steps. Plan, clicking add to button test. Control-C, go to my Excel. Whoops. Control-V. Notice what I just did there. Control C, Control V. You may not be a big giant fan of that. We then make our changes here. We do a global search and replace for TST. We can do a Control H, search for TST, replace it with Tailspin Toys. Replace all. Boom. Close. At that point, we can highlight these again. Control C. You know, we can even go click on the Tailspin Toys logo. We can put results here too. It goes to the right place. Highlight those items. Control C. Go back here and Control V to paste them. And we're in. That's round tripping. That is not what people are talking about.
No.
When you're talking round tripping, what they're saying is go find an Excel. Open the Excel file up inside, not Excel, go find a test case query, open it up in Excel, and then do the manipulations there. Yeah, no dice.
No.
It's too bad. It really is. You can cut and paste. There's some ways you can do it programmatically and other sorts of things, but it's a non-trivial exercise. So I can't just go grab test cases and export them and have that test steps column available and then edit it inside of Excel. It just comes across as read-only. Any other questions? You got it open. You're kind of cranking through those questions.
There was a recent question there. Can I filter by test suite or test plan? So when you're doing your work item queries, you're going in there and you're using your at filters and those sorts of things. So one of the questions that came up at that time was, can I filter by test suite or test plan? Now, I think that's the context the question was asked in.
That's the perfect context, because the answer is no.
Yeah.
No, because currently test suites and test plans are not actually work items. They look like work items. They've got drop-down fields for area path and iteration, but they're not really work items under the covers. So it prevents you from searching that way. Now, having said that, if you don't mind not writing a query, but you're okay going in and doing some analysis from the cube, all those relationships are in the data warehouse and in the cube, and you can pull those things out. That goes above and beyond anything in terms of that you would run across in this particular test, but you simply need to bind an Excel document to the cube and go from there. Other questions? Let's grab them. Let's just nail some of these questions verbally while we've got them, because I'm about to switch over, and then we're going into the whole wrap-up phase.
Okay, so there's a question there. Are you able to add states or statuses to defects?
Can you add states or statuses to defects? Absolutely. You're editing the work item templates themselves. In order to do so, you should attend tomorrow, because we cover that. That's a part of the admin exam, is really extending the work item types and making those types of modifications to it. So you can change pretty much anything that's inside of a work item.
You want another one?
Oh, yeah, fire away.
All right, there was part B to that. Also, how do you manage defects across multiple test environments?
What do you mean by test environment? The couple ways to interpret that is between test plans, in which case it doesn't really matter. They can fall between test plans. Between test and I know this one. Yes, yes, yes. You run a... You've got a configuration variable. And you say, I am running this test on Windows 7 IE 8. And you go run on Windows 7 IE 8, and you find a bug, and you file a bug. Well, that bug may apply to many other configurations as well. So you go in, and you'd have to run those separate configurations and tie those in to that same bug. But there's not a real clean way to do it. So for instance, let's say the bug occurs in IE 7, or let's say IE 8, and earlier, but not in IE 9 and not in IE 10. And worse, you have to fix it in IE 8, and it's still not fixed for IE 7. That management of that can be quite a difficult thing to deal with. Which brings me to test configurations. Test configurations, it's not the only way to divvy up tests. You can also do it by test plans. One test plan for IE 8, one test plan for IE 7, and you share the test cases between them. That's another clean, very clean way to do that, especially if there's no delta between it.
Okay, and a small, another small one. Mm-hmm. Carriage return inside a test step. I thought you could do that now.
Yeah.
I really thought you could.
Tailscoot Toys logo, enter, and I'm just skipping down from each one to the next one. You want a carriage return in there?
Yeah.
You can do it.
I thought you could. Yeah.
Yes, you go to Excel. And you in Excel, you use the shift and whatnot, control, get to the end of it. Is it control enter? Nope, alt enter. Alt enter. There, blah blah blah. Alt enter, blah blah blah. Alt enter, blah blah blah. And now
hey, guess what? You don't have to do it in Excel. Alt-Enter works.
Oh, Alt-Enter works
in a test step. I knew there was a way.
Ah!
Awesome. Awesome. Hang on.
Well, see, this is great. We just explored a brand new thing. So we're going to flip over to yours. And well, I can show it on mine, too.
There.
I can Control-C, pop back over, and clearly I could Control-V. But Alt-Enter, it works. It's been fixed.
I knew it there was, I just couldn't remember.
Oh, that's wonderful. Before that, we had to go download tools for that. So, separate tools.
Excellent. All right.
I think those are good questions. These are some great questions that people have. Should we take one more question?
Actually, how about a follow-up for one of the earlier questions I gave you?
Sure.
So, I think it's a clarifying comment there around that earlier question about the defects across environments.
Yes.
Same test plan, two different environments. Say test and prod. Does that help?
Oh, yes. So here's the problem. So I've grabbed we're talking the code promotion strategy here at some point. So what we've done is we've validated that the test is complete. We've got the bug, it's a defect. the developer fixes it, runs their happy path in the dev environment and complain and says, hey, we're done. And they promote it to the test environment. The tester walks in, does the happy path, it's great, then walks a bunch of other stuff and says, yes, it is now done. And they take that done bug and they close it. But that doesn't mean it's been promoted to the next phase, which is the prod phase. So how do you handle that? There's a lot of different ways. You're not going to run into it on this exam, but it's something that you do need to handle. So if you do that, a lot of times people will add a separate state in between it. So we go from one state, like validated in or verified in test, verified in prod, then closed. So we might ready for validation, et cetera. We might go through various states. People also grab a field which says the furthest point it's been validated. A lot of different ways to attack it. It's not elegantly attacked with this tool, however.
Okay.
Is that the last one?
No. Actually, the last one was, which would you rather fight, one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses? So Audible Designs is really interested in your reply there, Steve.
I'm gonna have to go with one horse-sized duck because those bills are sharp. I mean, they grab hold of your little legs and pull on that. Whereas I'm not sure that. I don't know.
Okay, look, I'll reply. So you're going with the one horse-sized duck.
Is that which Steve. I'd rather avoid? I wouldn't rather fight it. I'd rather fight the horde of little. Elephant or little elephant.
Actually, he would run away. there you go.
In either case. All right, let's jump over. I want to wrap this section and turn it over to that is a fantastic question. That was it's in my back pocket.
Okay.
Who said that?
And it's disappeared from
Audible Designs.
What's that?
Audible Designs.
Audible Designs. That was brilliant, Audible Designs. Probably the funniest question I've read today. Exam best bets. Be very familiar with your work items, work item queries, and how they're all related. I mean, just folks, this is basic 101 testing stuff with the Microsoft tools. You got to know it. You got to understand the life cycle of a bug and its associated test case, and I'd say, and its requirement. Know the Excel reports. You don't have to know them in deep, deep detail. But read the summaries of each one of those so that you know what they are. Same thing with the SSRS reports. And get to understand the absolute basics of the Lab Center tab. And don't go diving deep into lab management. That's for the admin exam. This one, it just kind of covers those pretty slowly. Anything you'd add for this?
I think you've done really well. You've covered that great.
All right. That wraps it up. And at this point, I think we just roll straight over to yours for the wrap-up.
So it's been a reasonably large module there. So let's just, I think we've got 5 minutes to go. So let's just push through it, Steve.
I think we should. If we took a break now, we take a 10-minute break, come back for 5 minutes, it would feel weird.
You'd come back?
I think we have to. I don't think anybody else would come back, however.
Alrighty. So
let's go ahead and wrap it right now.
Great. Down to my screen. So in terms of our wrap-up there, some test taking tips. The exam insurance and some other resources there, so reasonably short there. So some tips from Steve.
I'd say focus on manual testing.
Yeah.
It's the big one. The automated testing stuff, you got to know that it exists. Don't dive into great detail. Know work items and all their states. Know the states of configurations. Know the states of test suites, all those things, test plans. Leverage the double shot offer we're going to talk about. I think you've got 2 days left.
2 days left.
I think there's only 2 days left. Keep track of all your sure thing answers. Mm-hmm. I always write down my sure things. Once I've hit 35 of them, I breathe this big sigh of relief. No guarantee you're going to pass it, but at least once you've hit 35, you're kind of really getting over that hump. And then the random ones that you'll get on top of that will help push you over that 700.
35 sure things.
35 sure things.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good.
You got 48 questions. You should be able to hit 35 sure things. Mm-hmm. Don't get wrapped around the axle. Oh, that's probably an Americanism. Don't get hung up. Wow. Don't get angry if the question isn't quite right. Because frankly, it's not the questions aren't perfect. Cut the author some slack. Interpret the question in a way that you think they might have meant, and answer it that way. If you get all crazy and start thinking about, you know, different ways you could interpret this, and here's one side thing that could happen if, you know, the universe was flipped upside down and this happened. I know.
He's getting,
awesome.
He's getting really clever and creative up the back there.
It's that new box right there that does all sorts of stuff.
It's not him that's clever, it's the box.
Well, he's a clever usage of that box. There's some brilliant questions, but some of the questions are horrible. Just overcome the horrible questions. Run with it right from there.
Okay. And I've got some tips there as well, but they're hidden. So my tips, everything that Steve just said, but better. Remember? I don't know, you didn't leave me any tips. I couldn't agree more. You know, just the main thing for me would be it is about MTM. Don't worry about coded UI tests. Don't worry about, you know, all those other things. Don't worry about lab. I mean, I just reiterate those points you've made.
It is. It's an MTM test. Study MTM. Get comfortable with manual testing in all its incarnations. Get ready to blow into this exam and ace it.
Mm-hmm. Back to the slides. So, again, it's just that comment there about exam insurance. That's that second shot. And as Steve pointed out there, I'm pretty sure it's 30th, 31st?
It's the 30th, so okay. It's good for today, tomorrow, and the next day. To buy it. And if you only buy one, you have to take your exam by that date, by 5:30. Mm-hmm. But you can buy a basket of tests that don't expire till much longer. So you can still get the second shot if you buy a basket of tests. So if you still have at least two mm-hmm. tests to go, you're golden.
So jump into that URL straight away, look at the T's and C's, yeah. and potentially buy a basket.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I can catch all that. Some other resources there. So Steve pointed out this at the beginning of the session. So there's a great free ebook there from the Patterns and Practices group.
And I want to say a little bit more about this. This book is better than this exam for prepping real-world testing.
Mm-hmm.
This thing walks you through testing the continuous delivery when you deeply care about quality end to end. This book helps walk you through that. It's not perfect. Put together by a committee, things by committees aren't always brilliant, but the Patterns and Practices group has done a great job of saying, here are all the things from unit testing to setting up automated UI testing that runs in your build in the back end, really setting it out for putting you on the path to high quality software. And this exam, like you mentioned, covers manual testing, very much from a tester focus. This elevates the discussion and talks about quality end-to-end. So I would recommend this book. There's also the test infrastructure guidance on some ideas on how you can go ahead and install all of the test infrastructure you need. Plus, there's some supposedly in there is a bunch of source code that you can use that works with this testing for continuous delivery. However, one of the questioners wrote that source code was not there when they did the download. So might have to go to tig.codeplex.com, complain, get those guys to update their course, update their source code.
Fantastic. I think that sees us to the end there, Steve.
I think it does.
Well, thanks everyone for coming along and enduring, what is it, 6 or 7 hours of your day with us?
I know.
Certainly been a whole lot of fun from our end. I enjoyed myself, Steve.
Congratulations.
It was
very, very nice working with you again.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. And we'll see you all tomorrow if you happen to slide back in to help pass the admin exam.